Broadcasting from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
Live from the land that freedom forgot, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Welcome to it.
Welcome, welcome. Show 671. This is an important show. We need everybody listening to the show to like, follow, and share it on all the platforms, because this week when they were signing this $1.2 trillion stopgap budget where we're sending money to Ukraine to help them build a wall, what they did was the Justice Department came out with a federal red flag law that basically mimics the New Jersey red flag law, which we all know about, which is usurping our constitutional rights to due process. And there's just so many machinations. In the state of New Jersey, we have this anti-gun policy center in Rutgers we're going to talk about, that Murphy takes our taxpayer dollars and he pays this guy and his wife and a few other shills to basically come up with data to take our rights away. Never the criminals, just the law-abiding taxpayers, even though they don't have the data from, you know, 35,000 concealed carry permit holders right now. They don't have the data that it's the Wild West out there and we're all spinning our guns in the streets and having shootouts over parking spaces at the mall. But this guest is important. I've known him for a long time. Let me give you a little background. It's Dr. Gianni Pirelli, and he's one of six people based out of New Jersey who is board certified in forensic psychology. He's licensed in New Jersey, New York, and PA. He runs the group practice Pirelli.com. He's always in the ANJRPC newsletter where he advertises. His brochures are at the range, by the way, in the classrooms. He's a leading national expert in guns and mental health. He has worked with gun applicants and owners for over 10 years. I refer a lot of people to him. He's on the standstrong.biz, by the way. He's the lead author on three books published by Oxford University Press. His last book, Firearms and Clinical Practice, a handbook for medical and mental health professionals. I read it. It's deep. But for me, as a layman, it was a lot of information. And prior to that, he authored The Behavioral Science of Firearms. He mentioned me in that book, by the way, which is cool, made me semi-famous. Dr. Pirelli has neither sought nor received a single dollar in funding since he received his PhD. I've known him for over 10 years. He's been on the show numerous times, and he's back now to give us some cutting-edge info on the state of affairs in New Jersey with the mental health standpoint. Now, he also comes to my range, and he teaches a class to my employees. He's also been to my range after we've had issues with the things going on. So he's just a great resource to have. But he does gun evaluations, okay? So like if you have a police department that says, well, you need an evaluation, he does that. Other things that he's addressing, obviously, is red flag laws and carry permit applications. He's going to go over recently released carry data, issues with gun data research and funding, such as the Rutgers Gun Violence Policy Research Center, which really gets under my skin. Sandy and I, we've mentioned this many times. Every time something comes out, I email Dr. Pirelli. He emails me back. And, you know, he just, Doc, I know you're waiting with bated breath, but let me just read something that you posted, that Gary Mastrangelo sent it to me immediately after you posted it. And it is just so true that, you know, Governor Murphy recently celebrated the lowest number of shootings in nearly 15 years in New Jersey. Such is in light of New Jersey Attorney General Plotkin just releasing New Jersey's carry permit dashboard, which includes the data for carry permit applications in New Jersey since it became a reality. It shows well over 30,000 people have been approved per permits, which is 0.8% being denied. Most of them from the law and public safety aspect, which John Petrolino is also going after. Yet since 2020, Dr. Michael Anestis, executive director of the Rutgers Gun Policy Research Institute, state shill, has been putting out numerous interviews and publications warning New Jerseyans of the alarming data his lab has reportedly collected and the gun deaths that he believed were likely to follow as a result of the pandemic and carry rights, etc. In my interviews, talks, trainings, and publications during the same period, I would put the actual data into context and tone down the fear-mongering because the data simply wasn't there before, and it certainly isn't there now to support their alarmist positions. When it comes to firearms-related issues, I am happy to be right because it means no significant increase in gun deaths. But New Jerseyans may also want to know that I have not taken a single dollar of funding since completing my PhD in 2010, despite publishing 3 books with Oxford. Indeed, Dr. Enestis did publish 1 book with Oxford, but indicates that he has taken $8.7 million in funding from New Jersey since 2020 and an additional $14.7 million since 2019 from military sources, okay? Okay, let me tell you something. That guy is, that money was our money, $8.7 million in taxpayer money, okay? So without further ado, to discuss this deep and further and give us all good arguments to the anti-gunners when we're out there on the streets in New Jersey supporting those who support you, Dr. Pirelli, take it. I'm taking a nap after that intro.
How you doing? How? Oh my God! I feel like I'm at a reunion. It's been a few years. Yeah. What do we have? A pandemic? We got through it all.
We got through it all.
Yes.
Actually, last time I saw you, you came to the office when you were doing your rounds during the pandemic. What was it, the crawl?
The quarantine crawl turned into standstrong.biz. That's the last time I was at your office.
That was great.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
And so. Well, might as well just say a couple more things about Rutgers because I don't want to spend too much time. You know, I hate to give attention to these folks, but like you said, I'm a taxpayer myself, and it's worth pointing out. I'll give you a simple example. You know, you talked about millions of dollars. And all this stuff, by the way, is publicly available. You could just simply Google it. When people give me call me, even when it comes to the laws, I said, don't take my word for it. Just Google it, you know, whatever. If you Googled, for example, NJ Firearm Storage Map, NJ Firearm Storage Map, you would come to the New Jersey Gun Violence Research Center page, that's Rutgers, and you would see a map of simply 30 places where you could supposedly store your firearms if you needed to for any given reason, okay? 30 listings. If you cross-check that with Dr. Ernestis' CV, he got a grant in the amount of $107,672. So over $107,000 in grant money to list 30 places to store your firearms. I could have done that in my basement while playing Roblox with my kid.
And
I would have done it, by the way. I mean, last night I was getting ready for this show. There was Kung Fu Panda in the background. You think I was on a sabbatical? I don't even know what that word means. I went to school for 30 years. But you know, I don't want to spend too much time. This is all available. This, you have Rutgers saying on their own webpage, okay, on the cover of their webpage, the doctor says, "We are not an advocacy group." There's a quote. "We're not here to campaign for policies, etc." But there's pictures of him. I look at a picture from September 17th, 2019. He's on Twitter with a Moms Demand Action shirt. Okay? Now,
not campaigning.
Look it, folks. I just give you the information. You do what you want with it.
Hey, look, he just had to dig deep in the hamper for that shirt. You know.
This is... I have nothing against him. I never met him. I just have a problem with, as a taxpayer, spending over $100,000 on listing 30 places, okay, and making a map. And I also, you know, there's millions and millions elsewhere. So we can move on from that for now. But
real quick, Doc, his map is inaccurate. Because he lists like Dick's Sporting Goods. You can't store your guns at Dick's Sporting Goods. Meanwhile, he doesn't have gun for hire listed, and I have lockers.
Look,
well, you didn't pay him. That's the problem.
Imagine going to Dick's Sporting Goods on 17 North and Paramus. Hi, I want to store my guns here.
Yeah, Yeah, listen, put them over there.
$100,000 I don't know. I don't know about you. $100,000
That, I want in.
That's a six-figure salary. You could have hired someone for the year. Every day they could have worked, and they could have by foot probably traced out the map.
Wow.
You know, and that's, by the way, that's the simple example. Right. You know what I mean? That's the simple example. So it's scary. But look, we know this is the case in all of kind of academic settings and all that stuff. But this is in our face, and this is something we have to care about. Now, again, we can move on. Yeah, thank you for the introduction. As you indicated, we do a lot of evaluations in our practice. I do have a particular area of expertise. We deal with initial and return applicants, including carry guys and women. You know, obviously we're getting a lot of return applicants because people went for carry. And since the last time they applied, you know, it may have been 20 years ago that they got their ID card. So now, you know, who knows what's happened if they've been to the hospital or, you know, maybe they've been in different types of treatment or whatever. So now they're getting flagged, some people, you know, so we're dealing with that. We're also dealing with expungements, because there have been changes to our primary gun law in terms of ID cards, which is 2C58-3. Okay, and you may be familiar with that, which is in the subsection there that used to only be involuntary treatment that required expungement, which is, of course, a federal prohibition as well. However, Governor Murphy in January of 2023 signed into law that voluntary now applies. Okay. So now, by the way, people call me every day, probably every day, if not the, maybe not the weekends, and they say, I just need a letter from my department. That's the, like, the famous line, because there are over 565 municipalities in New Jersey, and God knows what they're being told at any given time by whoever's screening the application. And I tell people, it's no offense to the officers. They're not expected to know every modification of every law.
Nope.
How could they know that? There's a tons of laws, okay? But there, it was modified in 2023. It again, 58-3, you can Google it. And when people call me, I just have them Google it. And you'll see that it now includes voluntary treatment. Voluntary inpatient treatment must be expunged. Now, the crazy part about that is the town that you apply to still knows about it.
Right.
So you pay thousands of dollars to get me, and whether it's Knapp and Frank Pisano, whoever, to help you get that expungement, but your town still knows about it, and you signed a mental health waiver that said expunged stuff could be used against you anyway. So the thing, people don't understand this, and that, you know, every day it's like, you know, don't kill the messenger, because I have to break this to people. And they're like, and of course, you think about it. I'm coming off of a phone call where they were told they need a letter.
Right.
and they go, oh, we just need one sentence. The officer said it just has to be one sentence. I said, oh, I thought the Second Amendment was one sentence too. Right. Funny. I said, listen, I'll write you a sentence. I said, Mr. Jones can go fly a plane.
Right.
I go, take that to LaGuardia. Does LaGuardia still exist? I just use it because it's Italian. What do I know? It's an Easter look. This is the Easter special to my friends out there, Bonapasqua. But listen,
yes,
this is what's happening every day, Anthony. You know, again, when I first met you, I was confused. As you know, I was like, "Is this something that's happening? What's happening out there?" And now, as we've seen with modifications in laws, these slight modifications are creating a lot of issues that the officers don't even know. I have people who are getting issued ID cards and handgun permits, and 2 months later, the town's going back and taking it back. And they're saying, wait, we weren't supposed to give that to you because they didn't know the law, you know? Anyway, so we do the expungements. Of course, there was always the issue with restraining orders, but now we have the red flag laws as of, I guess it's almost been 5 years from now. So we're dealing with the red flag law stuff. We do RPOs and different stuff for law enforcement. And then on the criminal side, sometimes there's what's called Graves Act if a firearm was involved in the commission of an act. So we do all that type of stuff. So we do kind of all things firearm, but we also do other things. And that's important for people to know. I don't want you to think that, you know, if these laws go away tomorrow, I'll be just as happy. You know what I mean? I'm not making a career off of this because I'm capitalizing it. I'm making a career off of it in a sense because there was a need. and I filled a need that's there because you could call doctors. You know, they have a map of 30 places you could store your guns, albeit apparently inaccurate. Where's their map of where you can go to find doctors to help you?
Right. Right.
They don't have that map. Isn't that funny?
And let's create a law that stops people from getting help.
Look, they they have the opposite. They take over $8 million. They come out and criticize Eddie the Eagle, all right, and say, oh, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Well, it only took them 2 years to find out that Eddie the Eagle didn't work, but it took them 26 years to tell you Dare didn't work after everybody made a career off it. And this is from their own websites. I'm telling you, that there's no shame. But here's the thing. They said Eddie the Eagle doesn't work, Anthony. Sandy, they said it doesn't work. Where's their alternative program?
Where's the data?
They have none.
But why didn't they create one? Right. In other words, if you go and you say this is the most important thing, we got to protect kids, your program's no good. Where's your program?
Right.
Stop. Don't touch. Leave the area. Alert an adult. I mean, that's what the Eddie Eagle. But, it's not pro-gun. It's not anti-gun. It's taught by law enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. Tons of grant money. Matter of fact, the NRA dinner, a lot of money that John and John Jr., JJ, are going to raise for the dinner at the Tides October 2nd. Half of that money goes back to NRA Foundation Federal. Will be used for the Eddie Eagle program.
And Anthony, education is important. And to say it doesn't work, what they're saying is, that kids are still going to do things and not listen to you. I got three kids, okay? You don't need to give me $8 million for me to tell you that they don't listen to you, okay?
True.
Okay? I'll take.
All we have to just do buy is me, look at our own
listen,
background.
All you got to do is buy me a coffee, and I'll tell you all about it. We don't need millions in grant money. Buy me a coffee, and you can hear all the ways my kids don't listen to me on a daily basis. Anyway, so that's what we're dealing with. But so we've worked with over 250 I shouldn't say we work with towns, but people call us, and we've worked with people in gun related issues from over 250 towns in New Jersey. Again, this is the most densely populated state. We have over 565 municipalities, so we're halfway there. We've now worked with all 21 counties. Cape May was the lone wolf, but we found them. And I've been qualified every single time I've ever been called to testify. And so that's the story. But yeah, the New Jersey gun law, again, you have the change in the voluntary admission. You need to know that. So if you ever went to voluntary inpatient treatment, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm just telling you what the law says. You can read it yourself. Pretty much you're probably going to need an expungement. But I always give people attorneys. I always give the attorneys info. So they can cross-check that. The other change in the gun law that I see, which is kind of a matter of semantics, but is you mentioned before, the public health, safety, welfare, okay?
Oh, yeah.
They added an interesting line. Well, they added some words to the end of that sentence, and it now reads, this is subsection 5 of 58-3. It's to any person where the issuance would not be in the interest of the public health, safety, or welfare, ready? Because the person is found to be lacking the essential character of temperament necessary to be entrusted with a firearm. Okay?
Archaic language.
So that's been added. Now, I don't know what any of that means, but it sounds bad. So this is the type of stuff that we're dealing with. So... people,
well,
you know, by the way,
character's got anything to do with it, I'm out.
And Sand, I'm not here to. I know you guys are fighting. I'm not an activist, obviously, but I know you guys are fighting the big front, and I understand that. But just remember that these minor semantics, apparently minor semantics, are really what are tripping a lot of people up on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes, every day.
People, and these are the things that get slipped in. People get denied on, you know, speeding tickets and things like that. These things happen. So that's the deal. With the red flag stuff, that's a whole interesting conversation. That's almost a conversation for another day. But I can tell you what happens, what I've seen happen a lot of times. The red flag law, the TERPO law, as they call it, temporary extreme risk protective order, and then it goes to final. It's supposed to be based on immediate risk and danger. That's what it's supposed to be. So in theory, it should be very easy to beat that and not have it turn into a FERPA. Because think about it, immediate risk. Well, you guys know the legal process. By the time you get to court, it's 2 years later.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you were immediate risk, we would have known by now, by the time we get to court. But what happens, and what I warn people when they call me, is it can easily get changed. The prosecutor could easily say, you know what, fine, you win. We're no longer going to fight the TURPO. We're just going to turn it into a public health safety welfare. So you could actually see a changing of the goalposts mid-case there. So when people hire me, we do the full court press from the start. Now, as you can imagine, I have to deal with sticker shock on a daily basis because people are calling me. They think they need a one-page letter.
Yeah.
They go, oh, I just need a one-page letter.
Here's $20.
And I said, well, that's not what I do. I said, if, you know, what do you want me to, if you go into the mall and you just say, I just need something to tell time. Okay. Go to Fossil. I mean, you don't go to Rolex. I mean, I don't want to sound arrogant, but if that's all you say you need, but the problem is that's not what you need. And that's just what the officer might be telling you. And to clear that initial hurdle. But these things don't go away in New Jersey. Right. Unless you have an expungement. If you get an expungement, that's the only thing that you've ever been through, and you're moving to a different town, okay, where it would never come up again, and or you're basically never going to move, you're never going to get a handgun, you're never going to go for carry, then it won't come up again. But correct. Anytime you fill out an application, these things can still come up. And so, you know, unfortunately, people are just being told, oh, you just need a letter. I just need one sentence. So this is something we've been dealing with for years. You know, we've talked about this in the past.
You know, Doc, the most towns, in defense of them, they want a letter. The chief wants a letter and the permitting officer wants a letter basically to cover their ass.
Right.
You know, because they know something happened and they need that letter so that if the applicant, when they get the permit, do something crazy, they could say, well, I got this one-page letter from a board certified whatever that says he was okay or she was okay. So it's not my job. And I get it. I would want the same thing.
Sure.
You know, it's like me with someone coming back to work after they were hurt. We need a doctor's note.
Right.
So they equate it the same way. I get it. We get this. This is one of the biggest things we get at Gun for Hire emails. You know, it's just funny because we just had a customer reach out. He's not even a customer of us. He reached out to me for advice and because he went to another gun range. And the clerk there told him to email me. You know what? Which is fine,
right,
you know.
Right, right.
And I responded to the person and I referred him, you know, because they know that we get involved and we're active, you know, in the fight. But you know, myself and Phoebe and Matt and everybody who gets info at Gunfire emails, you know, we're forwarding stuff to you. And obviously, there's also Dr. Optoff in Bergen County. Those you are two big hitters in the state. Where are your offices, Doc? Tell everybody your website and your offices real quick, in case we forget.
My office is in Verona. It's next to Montclair. My website is gpirelli.com. It's gpirelli.com. But we work with people not only throughout New Jersey, but I'm also licensed, I think, as you said, in Pennsylvania and New York. So we work with people all over. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we refer a lot of people that need that one-page letter. And, you know, it's not like that because I've seen your evaluations. They're like 15-page letters.
Yeah. I mean, you know why, Anthony? When I tell people, you know, and I feel bad because obviously there's a cost to that. But I tell people, it's not my fault. I have to put the time in. I'm not just, trust me, if I did one-page letters, what I tell them is, look, if you call someone and you pay $500 for a one-page letter, I'm actually, you charging half of that if you charge per word, because I would be very wealthy if I was writing one page letters. I would have a line down the street.
But Doc, it's also your life, your training, your career, your insurance is all on the line. You can't just look at somebody and go, yeah, they look like they're fit.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, there's a whole process.
By the way,
I get
that one page letter, it does not hold up. If you ever get denied, you're going to Superior Court, okay? It's not going to hold up. Look, I should put up a sign. I remember my barber, he's a very good guy. I've been seeing him for over, you know, 30 years. And he used to have a sign in his door, we fix $10 haircuts. That's how I feel because right. I get these calls from people say, oh, my one-page letter, you know, I got this from this one. But these people disappear. It can't hold up. Now,
it's like the legal Zoom of mental health.
Yeah, yes, and what I warn people, and I don't want to discourage people from their rights, but what I tell them is this doesn't go away. Now you become an owner. Now you become an ID card holder and an owner, okay? If you move, you know you need to get a change of address. If you go for a handgun permit, even in your own town, after a certain period, they're going to start you from scratch. There could be a new detective screening this stuff. There could be a new chief. If you go for carry, we know that's every 2 years, okay? I say, how old are you? The guy goes, I'm 30 years old. I go, you're going to run into 15 more sets of decision makers in your life.
Right.
If you run into one who's radical and they say, I don't like your letter, what are you going to do? So the people who hire me, it's like anything else. I'm not here to work with everybody. I wish I could. But, you know, I work with people who obviously are thinking of the future and are basically want to, you know, make sure that they have a very solid evaluation in case there's an issue in the future.
Fix the problem once and for all.
What are you going to do? I'm not the rubber stamp guy. I mean, I guess there's a market for that, but the reality is, you know, it doesn't work. So that's the deal.
I've had employees use your service. Yeah. That's why I know I've seen your evaluations.
Yeah.
And I've had a ton of customers use your service. And, you know, there used to be three firms in the state of New Jersey. There was one way down South Jersey. He retired. Yeah. But it's not easy finding someone who is, I don't want to use the term gun friendly. What's a better term?
Knowledgeable.
Look, people say to me, Anthony, they go, are you a Second Amendment guy? I say, I'm an All Amendment guy. I like the whole thing. I like the whole Constitution.
Works pretty
you know
good.
What I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. You know, so yes. I don't know a better way to put it. I'm an All Amendment guy. Let's go with that.
And Doc, what I tell people when I refer, I'm like, listen, just because I'm referring to this person and their knowledge about guns doesn't mean you're getting approved. So don't come back to me pissed off if you're not approved, because the guy has to do his job. You know what I mean? It's not like a wink, wink, nod, nod. Yo, psh, use this guy. You'll get your letter. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't
work listen, that way. You and I and Sandy, you know, we get along just because we get along, you know, but in terms of the data, I didn't make up the data.
Right.
The data supports most of what you're saying most of the time. That's not because I like you. If you know, if the data didn't fall that way, I'd still like you, but maybe you wouldn't like me as much. I don't know. But the point is, the data is the data. I always say this to you guys. Whatever information I give you, whatever information I put out there, I would give to any other group. Okay? But they don't call me back. That's the difference. I can't tell you how many times I get calls from major hospital networks. I get calls from people in different states. I just got a call from a guy from Hawaii the other day, California. I get calls from all over, and they want all types of consultation. But they never call a second time once I tell them the reality of the numbers. Because I can't tell you how many administrators from hospital systems and school systems are, oh, we want to address gun violence. Now, that tells me usually there's a grant in place that they need to spend money on. Right. But the second I start breaking it down and then I tell them I don't want any money, I'm like the worst person in the world.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
They say, you don't want any money? They said, what can we pay you? None. Nothing.
How much does your blood boil every time you see a press release from the Rutgers anti-gun policy scam center?
I try not to look at it. I mean, if you see, I only post maybe once or twice a year now. I used to post some more. I can't keep doing it, you know, because you just get, I'm not an activist, you know, frankly. And so I don't want to come across as one where I'm just only picking on them. Because remember, I'm doing other cases too. I'm doing criminal cases. I do insanity cases. I do competency cases. I do all these other things in my practice as well. Obviously, the gun stuff is a primary area. But I don't want to sit there and pick on the guy and go out of my way because I don't want to be biased. But when I saw the latest data come out, and I really want to break down for you the carry data because I wasn't joking. Kung Fu Panda, you know, by the way, Kung Fu Panda, we're on spring break. I said, this is not sabbatical. This is my spring break here with the kids. And we look at the AMC movies. I said to my wife, let's see, maybe it's going to rain next week. We'll bring the kids to movies. They're on Kung Fu Panda 4, Anthony. I said,
holy moly.
We gotta binge watch three of them before I get there this week. I mean, I don't want to be in the dark. I'm going to fall asleep anyway, but.
You know what? Listen, I want you to break down the data.
Yeah.
We're getting close to a break.
Yeah, let's
so
do
let's
that.
Do the whole second half of the show of the data. Sandy, you good with that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, so let's take it from the top. You only have 1 week left, 1 week left to buy tickets to the CNJFO dinner, Women for Gun Rights Policy, on April 20th, where I will be at that dinner as well with my lovely wife, if she's talking to me that day. You never know. I said that out loud.
Yes. Didn't I? You'll pay for that.
So, yeah, please. Please, it's going to be at the Mansion in Main Street, and you can go to cnjfo.com for the Women for Gun Rights DC Project New Jersey fundraiser. Please, everybody, you have, I think it's April 6th is the final date. All proceeds go to the Women for Gun Rights. It's going to be a great, great event. So I think everybody should get their butt out there and take over. The John and J.J. Acapinti from the NRA dinner, which is going to be October 2nd, also want to remind us that September 14th, there's an Atlantic County dinner. October 2nd is our dinner. October 17th is a Hunterdon County dinner. And John says that him and his son, they're rapidly approaching 300 people for the dinner. Wow. Remember, there's only 500 tickets. John Valenti of Varsity Firearms Podcast, he got two tables, and he's been buying raffle tickets. And, of course, Rennie is working on his third table. So next year, John wants to call it the Rennie Friends of the NRA dinner. Mike Holmes from A&H Tree donated an enormous flag for the event that's going to be out there. Chris Decker and Sharon of Zen Float Center, they donated gift cards, and they're selling raffle tickets at their location. An old Gun for Hire alumni, Steve Elber, he has challenged Coin 0000, $200 gift certificate for the Porto restaurant in Sparta on Lake Mohawk, which is really, really nice. Our old friend Billy Meltzer from Meltzer Sporting Goods generously donated to our dinner by writing a check. Meltzer's lives in Woodland Park. He's a good friend of mine. Of course, Iacchetti's Kitchen donated stuff. And Matt and Phoebe have been working closely with John and JJ to get everything out there as far as brochures and everything. We're going to be donating a custom-built gun. So every week we're going to be getting updates on this. Doc, you should come to this dinner for sure. You should definitely come to the dinner. As a matter of fact, I'll buy you a ticket. You can sit at the Gun for Hire table, okay, Doc? So, and you'll get away from Kung Fu Panda for a little bit. Now, real quick, some advertising. Obviously, NY Tac Defense, nytacdefense.com. Peter Tillum, a legal defense fund for New York City. Peter, I know you listen every week. Dr. Pirelli is licensed in New York. You guys should probably hook up if you haven't already. If you live in the 49 other states, U.S. Law Shield, uslawshield.com. Use Gun for Hire, one word, in the code. Of course, Decoding Firearms by John Petrolino, available everywhere. Crime Proof, Think Like a Criminal is sold. By the way, both of our books are sold by John Zeller's shop in Monmouth County. And let me tell you something. John bought a table for the dinner as well. So again, it's amazing. So Aberdeen Guns, if you go and support those who support you, he bought a table for the dinner, and it's not even close geographically. All right. So Lake Island Rifle and Pistol Club, we know. My Doc, Optimal Health and Wellness, Varsity Firearms Podcast. Please, standstrong.biz, support those who support you. We definitely want to talk about that. Make sure you're on there. And news2a.com. It's a clearinghouse for all information. Now, with that, I want to go back to Dr. Pirelli, and I want him to talk about the data that he broke down. It's tremendous amount of work. So listen, everybody, like, follow, and share this show, and share the show far and wide, especially if you have anybody who's having any issues with paperwork or with towns we want to talk about. Also, early in the reader of the show, I'm still getting reports like towns of Pensauken and other towns. They're not doing their job in processing carry permits and pistol permits and FID cards in a timely manner. Listen, there's only 35,000 carry permits spread out across the state. There's no excuse for delaying people's rights. A right delayed is a right denied, all right? I mean, the city of Clifton has issued a ton of permits, and they've only had a couple of little speed bumps. I mean, they've been spectacular. Yeah. If the city of Clifton can do it, and Patterson has been coming up to speed now, the rest of you towns like Pensauken and stuff, get your crap together, please. A right delayed is a right denied. It's official misconduct, official malfeasance by not doing your job. Take care of the law-abiding, tax-paying citizens. With that, Dr. Pirelli, break this data down for all of us to digest and extrapolate and like and share.
Yes.
I'm out. I'm going to take a nap. Wake me.
Okay. So, you know, again, I don't want to brag, but one of my areas of expertise is statistics. Sandy and I, it's one reason we get along. We're stats nerds and research nerds. And that's because when I was in college, everybody ran away from statistics. And so I said, well, let me go towards it because no one's going to want to do that later. And that's one way to make a career.
Professor was pretty hot. So.
Right. Well, I didn't have that. But I knew that unless it's a fire, if everyone's running away from it, you should go towards it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I did break down these stats. Once again, you don't need to pay me, New Jersey. Keep your money. I do this on my own because it's the right thing to do, and I need to educate myself, and I'm going to give you some information. What I did is I took the publicly available New Jersey permit to carry data, which means any one of you can Google this. You just Google NJCCW data or carry data. You will find the website for the New Jersey Office of Attorney General, and you will see what's called a permit to carry dashboard. You will click on that link, and it will give you to this webpage that, incidentally, is something like public.tableau.com, not to be, I guess, mixed with taboo. And so what you will do at that point is you will get three documents. You will get brought to three documents. You will get to the two Excel files, and that'll be your application data, and then your applicant demographics data. And then you have notes, which is a Word document, which tells you how they collected these things. Now, I really want to point these out because, again, being a stats nerd, in addition to some other hats I wear, this stuff is very interesting to me. And I think that you will find this very interesting. Let's start with this. As you said, there are over 34. Well, here's the number again, whether their numbers are correct or not. You have 34,849 in the one database, okay, in terms of applicants. And you have from 2019 to 2024, although 2019 is just from like December that year and 2024 is just from January, February. Okay, bottom line is all you have is about 0.7 or 0.8% denials. We're going to get back to that. You have about 256 denials. Again, give or take these numbers. Because understand that some of the way they collected the data is insane. Not to bore you with statistics, but they just collected it in a very strange way, but I got through it. Now, here's what I want to tell you. As you said, public health, safety, welfare was the basis of denial in over 100 of the applications. So it comes to almost about 40%, followed by other and then some different reasons like criminal record, falsification, domestic violence. I will tell you that falsification is an interesting one because even that's about 11% of the denials, 31 people. And that does come up. And that comes up when people put no, okay? People put no when they have been hospitalized in the past. Now, that's actually a third degree criminal offense. I've only seen one person ever be charged with that in New Jersey. Incidentally, they charge for that all the time in Pennsylvania, even though it's an easier state for different reasons. But falsification, what I tell people when they call me is that gives the judge a very easy day on your appeal if they want it to be. Because some judges, some counties, I don't need to say the names, you probably know who I'm talking about, they use falsification to just cut out your knees because you can't say anything if you just committed a third degree criminal offense. I mean, of course, you could have a whole argument over was it willful or not. But frankly, by the time you're getting into that discussion in the middle of a New Jersey, Superior Court, it's a bad day for you. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so the point is mostly public health, safety, welfare. And I, like you said about Petrolino, I actually had a consult with him recently, and I know that he is addressing the concerns about the subjectivity of denials, and that's an interesting thing. So that's a talk for another day. But
you see, we all work together in New Jersey.
Here's another one. Okay, let's look at the years. You have 20,000 applicants, which is almost 60% of your applicants coming out of 2023. That doubled from 2022. So in 2022, you had 9,100 applicants. It went to 20,000 in 2023. As of right now, per their data, January, February, you have about 4,000 and change. You're on track for 26,000 applicants. So it is rising, okay? But the bottom line is the vast majority of applicants obviously are coming out of 22 and 23, particularly 23. Now, here's where it gets more interesting, in my opinion. When you look at the denials, what I did was I extracted the people denied, and I put them in a particular database. This will not surprise you, but it's validating. Bergen County, okay, it represents almost 20% of the state's denials alone. They have 44 people that they denied. And Essex County is right there, just a little bit higher at 20%. Now, I already know what people, because I'm a devil's advocate guy. That's my job. I have to go to court. You know, I'm not just in an ivory tower. When I say things, I have to defend them in court. So I looked at the population of those counties. In other words, the devil's advocate position is, well, Bergen County has the most people. Well, I looked at that. They have 955,000 and change people in Bergen County. It is the most populated county. But you have to look at proportionality, guys. Okay. In other words, Morris County has 500,000. Bergen County, let's say, has 1 million, right? So if we're just talking proportions, if I told you that 44 people were denied in Bergen, well, you would assume 22 were denied in Morris. No, only 5 denied in Morris, right? And when you start looking at other Somerset, 345,000 people, only 8 people denied, okay? Hudson County, 724,000 people, only 9 people denied. So it's disproportionate is the bottom line. And nobody, that's not surprising to everybody. When people call me from Bergen County, I tell them, you know, I'm stealing your money probably. Right. You know, I tell them that and I feel bad about doing that. Now, Essex County, this won't surprise you. Why is that so high? Well, yes, they do have a high population, but you then have to look at the town level, which I focused in on. Okay, Newark. I know anecdotally Newark's been a problem. People call me from Newark historically, and it's been an issue. They wait for a year or more to even get a response. Okay, right. You were just saying something to that point. What I have found, again, anecdotally, is the more urban areas are really getting pushback and people are having trouble. Now, here's what's interesting, okay? We're going to get to demographics in a minute. I have serious concerns about these data. And this is where, you know, I'm not an activist or an advocate. So guys like you, guys like John Petrolino, you guys got to push the next envelope, which is they include a database, I just told you, of applicant demographics, right? But guess what? If you look at this database of applicant demographics, there's a missing column. You know what that is? How many were denied? What I'm worried about is why are they omitting the denials in terms of demographics? Do they not want people to see that certain people of certain ethnic groups or age groups or genders are being denied disproportionately? Anthony, we're missing a column. I'm just pointing this out there to your reader, to your audience. You have a very large audience. You're missing a column. Look at it.
Yep.
Check it yourself. Check the applicant demographic database that the Attorney General's put out. Where is the column for denials?
You hear this, Petrolino?
You need that column, guys, because I'm not saying it is. All I'm saying is we need to know if there's a disproportionate denial based on ethnicity, gender, age. I don't know. That's a concern. I'm just pointing it out there. And I'm a researcher, so I need to know where that column is.
Another statistics guy out there, Ainsley Reynolds.
Yeah, Ainsley, get some help here. We need you.
Find that column, I'm telling you, because that's an important column. But let's go back to the towns for a minute. You're gonna find this interesting. Okay. Newark. Ready? Hear me out. Newark is let me step one back. Here's another devil's advocate position. People might say, well, maybe those towns got more applicants. Again, 10 steps ahead. I looked at the number of applicants they got and I looked at their denial percentage. Okay? So I told you the state denial percentage is about 0.7. That's the state denial percentage, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Newark, 3.4. That's 5 times the state average. Winslow Township, East Orange, Hamilton Township, Wayne, and Patterson are all 3 to 4 times the state average, okay, of denial rate. But here's a striking one, and I don't know, I haven't really heard anything coming out of this town. You tell me, Secaucus is 12 times the state average of denials.
Wow.
Now, again, they only have 7 denials, but they have 85 applicants. But we're talking about rates. We're talking about denial rates, okay? So this is the way, you know, they put these data out here, and it's not, you know, I happen to be an expert in data analysis and so forth. So this is the way that I look at data and cross-check it, okay? So I could think 10 steps ahead. I look at the size of the population. I look at the number of applications they got. I can only work with the data they've provided.
Right.
But what I'm telling you is Newark is 5 times the state average of denials in terms of their own applicants. Winslow, East Orange, Hamilton, Wayne, and Patterson, and Secaucus is 12 times. Now, it could be coincidence in a place like Secaucus because it could be low numbers. And we know from a data standpoint, when you have relatively low numbers, it just could be an artifact, as they call it, of low data, right? In other words, if you're going to see, I don't want to harp on Kung Fu Panda 4, but you're going to the movies, you ask 2 people, how's the movie? You know, whatever. So one person says it's good, one person says it's bad. Obviously, if you ask 1,000 people, you know, it starts to go regress to the mean type of thing.
You know what the state hides, right? Yeah, on the NICS Research Center. They put right away, notice, red flag, exclusion of pending applications. The state demanded pending applications not be included because they don't want you to see how long. And then exclusion of application date versus issue date because they don't want you to see how much they're breaking the law. And then, of course, red flag 3, exclusion of demographics, which leads right into what you're saying. So they're trying to hide all of this. I wonder what Michael Anastasis has to say about all of this.
Wasn't it funny? After $8+ million, we're not getting policy analysis. We're getting different things. But again, that's a whole other conversation, really. But let me point out a couple more things. Newark.
Please.
Newark is 60% of the denials in Essex, 66%. East Orange is 15%, okay? So that's telling me you got some issues there in Newark and East Orange. Once again, Bergen is a little bit more spread out, but everybody knows that Bergen is a more general problem, and everybody kind of knows why. I'm going to leave it like that because I told you I have to, you know, see these people, so to speak. I'm not afraid of the truth. I'm not afraid of the truth, but you know, anyway, let's talk about demographics for a minute. This is really interesting. Now, I looked at females. 51% of the population in New Jersey is females, but you only have 7% carry applicants. I don't know if that's normal or not. Frankly, from the national statistics, I haven't gotten that far. But, you know,
our range is that the carry permits we've issued, the qualifications we've done in New Jersey for gun for hire, 16% were women that took our qualification course. So we're almost we're more than double the state average.
You're double the state average. You have 80% white. You have 13% black. Now, those numbers basically mimic the population size.
Yep.
You have about 70% white in New Jersey. But here's an interesting one. Hispanic is only 4% of applicants, even though they make up over 20% of the population in New Jersey. So that's an interesting thing. You don't have Latino, Hispanic really applying. So these are just kind of interesting things. Age groups, this is not particularly surprising. 2/3 are from 30 to 59 years old. That you're getting 2/3 of your applicants out of that age group.
But 88 people were over 90.
I saw that.
God bless them.
88 people were over 90. Yeah, really. And
we've had a few.
Yeah.
So listen, we have this gentleman. I can't say his name.
Yeah.
He's from Bergen County. He's 96 years old.
Yeah.
He came in.
Yeah.
And he got his carry permit. And damn, he could shoot good. He comes in with his grandson, who's a cop. And we were talking, and he told me during COVID, he had a new C7 Corvette, and he took it on the Palisades Parkway during COVID, and he maxed it out at almost 200 miles an hour. And then the next day, he took it to the dealer, and he traded it in. At the time, he was like 91. But yes, he's our oldest carry permit applicant. He's 94 or 95 now.
God bless him. I mean,
so, yes.
Listen, God bless him. I watched Need for Speed with my teenage son. I almost had a full-blown panic attack. So, you know, I respect people who can tolerate stimulation. So those are kind of a general breakdown of those statistics, but I also want to cross-check it or put it in perspective of the New Jersey death or mortality data, if I could, yes. Anthony. Because yes, what's happening, by the way, is that's what they're doing at the state level, the politicians, these research institutes, they're conflating, right? They're trying to make it sound like there's some sort of connection between these data, people who are going to carry, people who own guns legally, and gun deaths. But the data doesn't shake out. First of all, you had 446 gun deaths in 2020, okay, out of New Jersey, all right? Now, the issue is the majority of those are homicides, and we know that the majority of homicides, like 70%, are with a firearm, okay? But when you look at the death rate due to firearm injury, okay, you have black, which is the way they characterize it, being 4 to 5 times the death rate of white and Hispanic. In other words, when you look at white and Hispanic death rate from 2000 to 2016, for example, they're all under 5%. When you look at black, a lot of it is almost in the 20s, 15 to 20%, okay? So what that's telling me, or at least suggesting to me,
black people are better
and
shot.
This is not surprising, it's not surprising that the classic sociological understanding of the young, poor, urban minority male, person living in an urban environment, is more at risk of a gun death. We know that. Yep. We know about gangs. We know about illegal guns. So what's happening is they're not putting, here's another missing statistic. How many of those gun deaths are due to illegal guns, right?
Right.
They're not telling us that.
Right.
I'm not going to...
Because they know it's not good for them.
Okay.
That's why they're not
and
telling
jumping
us
jumping off on that just for a second, Gianni, is it, from the standpoint of the public health issue being used, it's been used for years and years and years. And I remember back in the day when they tried to jam that stuff through the U.S. Public Health Service through yet another grant, and Public Health Service, of course, went along with it, that all of the data they collected were collected on illegal guns. When they came out with a statement that if you have a firearm in your house, you're more X amount times more likely to be injured or killed by a firearm. Yes, of course.
Everybody knows that.
I mean, again, buy me a cup of coffee and I could tell you that. It's not, you know, any ER doctor understands that. These are not lawyers and accountants.
Listen, Sandy, if you have stairs in your house, you're more likely to fall downstairs than someone who has no stairs in their house.
Exactly. I mean, what the hell?
Wow, what a concept.
You know, this is what we're talking about. Look, from 2000, again, publicly available New Jersey mortality data, DOH, right? From 2000 to 2020, you have gun deaths averaging 442 a year, okay? And they haven't changed. There's a slight range. There's a couple years where they're in the 300s. There's 1 year where they're in the 500s. But basically, as of 2020, which is the last one they report on, it's 446. It's exactly what the average has been for 20 years. Okay.
Do they reference so we're that against what the deaths from fentanyl would be or medical malpractice? I was wondering.
Well, I don't have that off the top of my head, but I could tell you this. U.S. gun, how about this one? U.S. gun injuries, not deaths, right? 300,000 in 20 years. U.S. dog bites. 300,000 per year. I'm telling you, Fido is much more danger to you than your gun when it comes to that stuff. But here's the point. Look, nobody disagrees. All gun deaths are bad. All dog bites are bad. Whatever. Right. We all know that. But what happens is when you allow people to have these types of talking points, like, oh, if we could just save one life, or what you're doing is you're paying, I just want you to know, New Jersey, you're now up to $3 million a year paying state-funded entities like Rutgers to do nothing in terms of they are not affecting these rates at all. They basically statistically cannot affect these rates. These rates have been stable for 20 years, okay? That's what happens. And it's not because I don't want it so. Every single day I go to work, I actually work with people to actually prevent gun deaths. Right. That's what I actually do. I don't sit there with a t-shirt on looking for funding, okay? I actually talk to people and conduct risk assessments, and I actually work with them and go to court to try to prevent gun deaths. When you're sitting here in the bleachers, okay, but you're with a glass of champagne, apparently, I'm sitting there on the stand with a beer in my hand. They got champagne in the bleachers. I didn't know that. Okay, that's what we're talking about. This is a problem that I have, which is, look, if you want to fund an agency, I'm not saying they should do this. I'm just saying if we were going to fund anything, get these people licensed and get them on the ground.
Right, right.
Get them on the ground. Like I said, come up with a map of doctors that can help you for treatment, for evaluation. Don't give me a map. And every study you do basically is negative and everything you do. So anyway, that's the story. But the gun deaths are like that. And like you said, we're missing data here, and we're missing it probably for a reason.
Yeah, conveniently. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. For a reason. By design. Come on. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So
that's the story.
That's the story. So the red flag thing, now it's federal. I mean, we've had it in New Jersey for a while. Again, no Fourth Amendment rights, basically no right to due process.
And proof positive, what starts in New Jersey doesn't stay in New Jersey.
Well, I wrote a chapter a couple of years ago on this. Like you said, your neighbor, somebody can call. Now, I try to talk to people, not that they want the information in terms of the people who are creating these laws, but health literacy is in the gutter. All right. Sandy knows this better than anybody. Yeah. Forget about mental health literacy. That's like way gone. Now, you're telling me if you see something, say something, right? Everywhere you walk, you see these signs. Now, at the same time, when I go to my primary care doctors, there's a poster that tells me how to wash my hands.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, I need a poster to tell me how to wash my hands or what the common cold is, but I'm supposed to identify a risk with my neighbor, okay? Listen, I don't know about you, but I like my neighbors. You know why I like them? Because I never see them. I avoid them. That's why I like them so much.
Yeah, okay? So.
I don't know if they're a risk. I'm an expert in firearm-related risk. I have no idea if my neighbor's a risk. How would I know that?
Right.
You know, so this is what they're, here's another omitted piece of data. For example, and this is a couple years ago, I looked up, for example, if you see something, say something in New York, and they said, oh, there's like $10,000 or $15,000 calls we got this year because somebody saw something and somebody said something. They're making it sound like it's a good thing. For all we know, 90% of them were false, and you violated everybody's rights.
Right.
So this is what happens when you're celebrating laws without analyzing them. I equate it to this. When they celebrate laws and they pass out the pens, this is like you call timeout in the basketball game, fourth quarter, and the coach draws up a play and everybody celebrates. We didn't run the play yet.
Right. Exactly.
What are you doing? The band comes out. Everybody's charging the court. They're cutting the hoop. Don't cut the hoop. There's still 30 seconds left in the game. We don't even know if it worked. But they're celebrating this stuff before we ran the play.
Of course.
Just because he drew up the play.
Right.
So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Yeah. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. But again, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I'm just here to give the information, you know, and that's all I can do.
But listen, our listeners, we need this knowledge because we're not going to get it from the government-funded mainstream media, right, Doc? Right. So we need this knowledge because we need these tools because I'm always helping people. They want to know, help me with this argument. You know, at work, they want to do this and they say this or they say that. So this is just another aspect that we need. Because you see the data is all slanted and like this Rutgers Policy Center, the tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer money to come out with these, you know, emotional reports saying, listen, I can't believe I looked through this whole storage thing for guns and it's 90% inaccurate. You can't, he doesn't even know the two C codes. Evan Knappen should be ripping this apart or John Petrolino should be ripping this apart. You can't. You can't just drop your guns off at Dick's or any right. FFL. The ATF and the state police will come down right. on you. Listen, okay? You can't do that.
Yeah.
They are not allowed to hold your guns.
Unless
it's somebody like me or FSS or gun sitters or whatever.
Licensed to do that. You're right.
But look, yes. Before you let me go, because I know we're out of time, I'm going to go into the New Jersey cartography business and I'm going to start charging. Look, I'll give you a deal. They charge $107,000. I'll charge $100,000. Just, you know, if you pay with cash, no tax, $100,000 just straight, and I'll make as many maps as you like. I'm just putting it out there to New Jersey. If you like maps, $107,000, I'm going to give you the $100,000 family discount.
That's right.
I'll make as many maps as you want. Okay?
He doesn't like me at that center. That's why my place is not listed as a place to store guns. Boy, he's doing such a public yeah. service to people out there who may be in need and need to, you know, get rid of their guns while something's going on. All about the Benjamins. Right, right. All about the Benjamins.
Yeah.
Doc, I want to thank you so much for being on. Tell people where they can find you, how they can find you, and what else your area of expertise. Then I'm going to roll it over to Sandy. And thank you all for everything you do, Doc. Thank you for working with my staff so much in the past, present, and the future. We really appreciate it. Gary thinks you are the shiznit.
Thank you. Gary's the best, too. gpirelli.com, gpirelli.com. Only call me if you're serious. We don't do letters. We don't do $500 letters. We don't do $10 haircuts. We do the real thing, so... All right.
Well, Danny, it is always a joy to speak to you, and it's been yeah. great. And to echo what Anthony said, we really do need some people to step up and grab hold of some of this data and challenge the data. I'm talking to the legal beagles out there. And we love you guys. Buona Pasqua e tutti. And happy Easter to everyone. And a blessed and safe week. All right. Well, looks like you've done it again. You've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gunfire Hire Radio. Gunfire Hire Radio is a Counterfeit Media production. The music is in the broadcast and managed by Cowboy Music. New York, New York. On behalf of our show host, Master Trainer Anthony Calandro, author of Crime Proof, Think Like a Criminal and Beat Them at Their Own Game, this week, is available wherever great books are sold, not where shitty books are sold, and at the Gun Shop Bookshop Gun Range, known as Gunfire. Well, from the shadows of the New York City skyline, actually the Jersey Shore,
right.
The shores of the Gulf of Mexico, both in Florida and on the beautiful Alabama coast. God willing, Jesus carries in the batteries hold out. We will see.